Hit a home run and get pre-approved for your next refinance or home purchase at thehomeloanexpert.com. Enjoy the podcast.
This is Cardinals broadcaster and Schnucks shopper Dan McLaughlin. Schnucks would like to thank everyone during this difficult time. That includes those that are working in the stores. As you can imagine, during this time, Schnucks employees are putting in long hours around the clock to best serve our community. So the next time you're in Schnucks, tell them thanks and that you appreciate them. Let them know how much we appreciate their efforts, because we will all get through this together.
It is a Wednesday, and every Wednesday we visit with Brian Walton of thecardinalnation.com, and he's got great insight into the minor leagues and also what's happening with Major League Baseball. thecardinalnation.com. We call this Wednesdays with Walton. As always, Brian, good morning to you. How are things?
Great, Dan. It's always a pleasure to be on.
It's always a pleasure to visit with you, and I know so many fans are curious about not only Major League Baseball, but a minor league season. What are you hearing on the latest of minor league baseball?
Well, there's no doubt that everybody's priority right now is on trying to figure out how to get the major leaguers back as soon as possible, but as safe as possible. And while there's a lot of optimism around the game, you know, that also the thorny questions of testing and, you know, keeping people safe haven't been worked out yet. And once that does get resolved and there's a plan that can be executed, I think attention will go to the minor leagues. And the most logical scenario right now would have teams assembling in their spring training locations and have some type of a season that would be kind of like a spring training or extended spring training, where maybe you're scrimmaging against yourself, maybe you're scrimmaging against teams in the local areas. But I think the one thing that folks do seem to be pretty well accepting is that the ability to play in 160 different towns across the U.S. this summer for minor league baseball just, you know, isn't likely. And if there are no fans in the stadiums, then there's no incentive for the minor league teams to be in business, because, you know, selling tickets and concessions are their, you know, total revenue stream. So, you know, if they can accomplish anything for minor league ball, it seems like it's going to be most likely it'll be something in the, you know, the Jupiters of the world.
How are minor league players trying to stay in shape during what has been such a difficult time for any pro athlete right now?
Well, the Cardinals are doing a great job of keeping in touch with everyone, as probably all organizations are, and they have plans for each of them to work on the performance organization under Dr. Butler, and the strength and conditioning folks, you know, have plans with each player, and they've had to customize them because, you know, nobody can get into gyms right now, for example, and to, you know, health clubs, at least in most of the country. And, you know, some guys may have access to batting cages, and others may not. Some guys may just, you know, be able to do long toss, and, you know, some can have batters step in, they can pitch against live competition, other guys can't. So, you know, everybody's a little bit different in terms of what they have to work with, where they are. But, of course, the idea, and we've heard both John Mozeliak and Mike Schilt say this, the idea is to kind of have everybody in a January kind of level of preparation where they've started to ramp up, but they're, you know, the pitchers aren't throwing at full velocity yet, that kind of thing, because, you know, they want to save bullets and ramp them up whenever spring training 2 is able to start.
In terms of who benefits coming back, if we have baseball, I know you've kind of really had a long look into this. Who do you think benefits potentially from that Cardinal roster?
Well, at the initial point, you say, well, it's easy. It's the guys who had mild injuries during spring training. The Miles Michaelises, you know, for example, who, you know, it looked like wouldn't have been ready to start the regular season. Cecil, you know, we're not sure about him. Andrew Miller was another one who was kind of banged up. You know, so those guys now should be able to, you know, whenever they come in, you know, should be ready to go again. But the guy that intrigues me the most on the pitching staff is Jordan Hicks, because as folks probably remember, he required Tommy John elbow ligament replacement surgery last June. And a normal 12-month kind of turnaround, 13-month turnaround, would have had him back around the All-Star game early July. And, you know, everything seems to be pointing to him being on track for that. And, you know, we don't know what his control is going to be like when he comes back. We don't know if he's going to be throwing 103 right out of the gate. But Jordan Hicks is the closer of the St. Louis Cardinals. And if he's available, you know, I think he might get a chance to show if he can do his job or not. And if he can, you know, he could potentially be available for most all of this schedule. And, you know, it's the one area that there's worry. Obviously, the Cardinals starting pitching is in great shape. You know, we know about the six guys on top, plus the Gombers and Ponce de Leons and Helsleys and Cabreras that back them up. There's 10 guys right there. But the bullpen, you know, the depth wasn't necessarily as strong. And if Hicks could somehow, you know, contribute this year, it would just be a huge benefit for the Cardinals.
You know, the other guy that you talk about, Dylan Carlson, I'm just so intrigued with this young man. And it's unfortunate right now it's a lost season. But how do you think he approaches 2020 and the Cardinals approach it as well?
Yeah, from the position player perspective, there's no doubt in my mind that Dylan Carlson could really benefit from this delay. And the reason I say that is we don't know yet what the size of the rosters that major league teams will be allowed to bring. We don't know the construction of those rosters. We don't know if those rosters will be set or whether they'll be able to change. We don't know if non-40-man players like Dylan Carlson could be added. And will there be a taxi squad? And if there's a taxi squad of guys who aren't active, would they be accruing service time during those days that they aren't active? Because one of the big concerns about Dylan Carlson, aside from the fact that there isn't a place to start him necessarily in the lineup, one of the concerns was, hey, if you start his service clock at the beginning of the year and he puts a full year in, you know, you lose him a year earlier to free agency. Well, if there's some kind of, you know, taxi squad where he isn't accruing service time, then the issue gets down to where can you play him? And guess what? The schedule, the way the organization that we seem to be gravitating toward is one in which the National League and the American League teams will play together. And common sense tells you if that's the case, there's probably going to be a designated hitter. And if there's a designated hitter, now you've got one more bat in the Cardinals lineup. And who better than Dylan Carlson? Either he's your DH or maybe Dexter Fowler, someone like that becomes your designated hitter, and Carlson plays in right field and you've, you know, potentially improved your defense as well. So I think both Jordan Hicks and potentially Dylan Carlson, depending on how they structure the rosters, are two of the Cardinals that could probably benefit the most from this delay.
Absolutely. Good points. A lot of news with Yadier Molina saying he wants to play beyond 2020. I wasn't shocked at all. I thought that was the direction he'd go anyway, but there was indications that if it's not with the Cardinals, he would play potentially somewhere else. What did you think about his comments?
Well, I thought that he was basically taking back control of his career. You know, in winter warm-up, I think we were all kind of surprised when Molina said, hey, you know, if the Cardinals want me back, I'll play, and if they don't, I'll retire before I play somewhere else. He basically said, hey, it's going to be the Cardinals as to whether I, you know, whether I continue or not. And he's decided now, you know, given that he's not, you know, he's losing a half a season, that you know, hey, I definitely want to play next year. And he knows that the Cardinals are dragging their feet on offering him a new contract because the way the rules are set up, the collective bargaining agreement, a player can only receive no more than a 20% reduction in salary from year to year for an extension. And Molina makes $20 million a year. He was the highest paid Cardinal prior to the Goldschmidt extension. But, you know, he's getting to a point in his career where you say $20 million a year is a little steep. Maybe even $16 million is a little steep. And there's no reason to not wait and see how Molina plays this year if he stays healthy and all before you commit that much money to him going in the future. So this is something that the same scenario happened with Adam Wainwright. Now, granted, Adam Wainwright was coming off some injury-plagued years, but he was coming off a five-year contract, and he actually had to become a free agent before he could accept a lower deal with the Cardinals. And his first year with the Cardinals, 2019, after that, you know, he had a very incentive-laden contract. Only $2 million of the $10 million that Adam Wainwright made last year was guaranteed. He earned it back because he basically, you know, outperformed everybody's expectations other than his own, perhaps.
I thought,
but there's no reason why Molina couldn't come back on some type of contract like that where, you know, the more he plays and the better he produces, the more he gets paid.
Makes sense. I thought this was interesting. You've been writing about the cyclical nature of the minor leagues. The when you add teams get contracted, and it's been going on for a long, long time. We may have it here in 2020, but you've done a lot of research into this, haven't you?
Yeah, it's, you know, there's a lot of conflicting emotions about what's happening with minor league baseball right now. You know, folks who live in these 40 or 42 cities are very, you know, discouraged because they're potentially going to lose their affiliated ball. And, you know, whatever comes in to replace them won't be the same. It'll be something, maybe, hopefully, but it won't be the same. But, you know, if you look at the history of minor league baseball, there's been these cycles of huge growth and then something happens. In some cases, it was World War II. Where, you know, they really, really dropped back. The 1950s with network television and the migration of the suburbs and everything changed, and minor league baseball went another cycle that went down. But the interesting thing, in 1962, the minor leagues were in deep, deep trouble. And MLB stepped in and said, okay, we're going to guarantee we're going to keep 100 minor league teams, basically four per major league club. and we're going to subsidize salaries, and we're going to make sure that you minor leagues can stay in business. And what's happened since then was Major League expanded. They added more teams multiple times in the 80s and 90s, and organizations continue to invest. And so now the number of minor league teams are much higher. Well, now organizations feel like they can more cost effectively develop and identify players, and so they want to scale back on the number of teams. And, you know, on one hand, you say that stinks, and it does. But on the other hand, you know, it's what business is like in America today. Companies decide they can run more efficiently, and unfortunately, in some cases, that means, you know, jobs are lost or they get sent overseas or whatever it may be. So basically, I've gone through this whole thing. And the interesting thing, I think, about the current rumors, at least, that 120 teams are what they're going to want to keep, that same four teams per organization, AAA, AA, High A, Class A, are the same four per organization that MLB agreed back in 1962. So, you know, it's kind of back to the future in a way.
All-time Cardinals team. You've been working on that at thecardinalnation.com. What have you come up with?
You know, it was funny. I got contacted by some friends at RotoWire who are on the SiriusXM Fantasy Radio on the weekend, and they wanted to do a draft of all-time Cardinals teams. And so they invited me. We had a three-man draft, and it was just so much fun to look at the career contributions of so many great Cardinals players over time. And we basically then had a draft, and they let me as a guest have the first pick. And of course that was a no brainer, Stan Musial, then Gibson, Hornsby, Pujols were the first four, pretty much the guys that you would think. But after that, it got interesting. You know, do you pick Ken Boyer, the third baseman, before Ozzie Smith, the shortstop? You know, where does Ted go versus Yachty? Where does Dizzy Dean go? How about Brock versus Edmonds, Red Shandies versus, and so there was just so many fun decisions that were made. And I've got several articles about them on the site. Folks can go read and they can see about the team I put together versus my competitors. But it was just a whole lot of fun and a good way to pass a Sunday here with no baseball.
I love it. Good stuff, Brian. What are you working on this week?
Well, I'm still working on my minor league history series. I digressed from it for a few days to focus on this other stuff. But the next one up is the Gulf Coast League and the history of the Cardinals in complex baseball. That's an area that they've invested in, and I think they're going to continue to invest more in the future. So, we're continuing to cover the news as it happens in terms of resumption of the season as well. And, we'll continue to have our active message board where folks come and talk about baseball and wish we had it back again.
We all do. Thanks, Brian, so much. We'll catch you up next Wednesday. Great stuff.
Take care, Dan.
Luke Hughes, we are St. Louis.
Dan McLaughlin here to tell you about the hometown automotive family I trust the most, the Luke Hughes Automotive Network. And you know they are St. Louis. Luke Hughes has been a part of St. Louis for over seven decades. They're proud to support St. Louis and the surrounding areas with cars, youth, sports, and charitable efforts. 14 brands, 10 locations. Just visit Fuse.com to start shopping today.
Lou Fuse, we are St. Louis.